Time now for NHL Hour with Bill Clement and Commissioner Gary Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
This is Gary Bettman. With me is Bill Clement. You're on XM 204. We'll be happy to take your calls. Richard Petty will be my guest. Bill, you're down in New York and I'm in Toronto. I'm not trying to avoid you, but this is 2 weeks in a row.
I was going to either that or you're really curious as to who has more snow, Utah or Southern Ontario? And what's the verdict? Because that's where you were last week, right, in Utah?
Yes. There's a lot of snow in Toronto, but I'll tell you, Utah was great. The skiing was awesome over the weekend.
Oh, you did get to ski?
Only over the weekend.
That's all right. You're allowed to ski on the weekends. By the way, is this scheduled business or fires to put out in Toronto, or are those things sometimes one and the same?
No. This is good scheduled business. We're going to announce a new relationship between the league and Bridgestone Firestone Tire. They're joining the league as a marketing partner and sponsor, and we're delighted to be associated with such a great company. And we're having a little event tonight to kick things off. So that's why I'm in Toronto. And I didn't want to miss the show, so I came to the XM studios here. I know you're in New York. And
I was there on Monday. How are the guys treating you? Because they were poorly behaved on Monday.
Really? I think that may have been you then, because they are absolutely delightful. They couldn't be more hospitable. But they did complain about some guy unnamed who was here on Monday who just made a mess of the place.
I would beg to differ. I think that's the impact of you being a commissioner sitting there as opposed to me sitting there.
You think?
Hey,
listen, go ahead.
I've always been curious as to the size of the Toronto NHL office compared to the New York office. What's the difference in manpower numbers?
Oh, my guess is we have about 30 to 40 people in Toronto, and we probably have about 250 people in New York. Hockey operations is an officiating is centered in Toronto. There's a PR department in Toronto, and we do our marketing and business there as well, plus central scouting.
And you've also had a chance to locally confirm our guest. I've known personally almost all of the guests that we've had on the show. Do not know Richard Petty, and he's not a guy that does too many interviews, so I'm really looking forward to this. How long have you known the man that is the president and CEO of Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment?
Well, some might suggest including him too long, but it is for as long as he's been with the Leafs. My guess is it's about 9-10 years. You know, he and I are both getting up there in age, so I think it's been almost a decade. Just shows that time flies when you're having fun. And how has your week been? I just got back from Denver, actually, on Tuesday night. We had the president's meet on Monday, and then we had the club business marketing people get together, you know, league-wide basis. So there's been no shortage of airplanes this week.
Yeah, no doubt. I had a little bit of airplane time myself. I got a chance to call the first of those home-and-home games between the Flyers and the Leafs. And, boy, I don't know, you're there. Is the city buzzing now with the Leafs? Looking like they're still alive in this. They swept the Flyers Tuesday and Wednesday.
Well, I think there's a bit of a buzz, but it's been tempered by a groin injury to Matt Sundin. So I think if they believed and knew that he'd be 100% healthy for the next game and for the duration, they'd be feeling pretty good about things.
Mm-hmm.
But the races are exciting. I mean, just look at the standings again. We've been talking about this every week for the last 2 months, but it is absolutely incredible. With the exception of a couple of teams, everybody's still in the hunt.
Yep, the games get bigger, and naturally, you would think that the games and the compelling aspects of these races would dominate the news. But Yankee Stadium has kind of snuck in there. Apparently, Yankee Stadium is being scoped out for a Winter Classic game next year. Can you tell us how much of this is accurate, and is there a chance that this is going to happen?
Well, your description of scoping it out is probably more accurate than anything I've read in the last week. We are exploring our options, as you and I have discussed over the last few weeks. The Winter Classic was terrific on January 1st, and it's an event we'd like to replicate in terms of the excitement, the attention, the emotion. And so we're looking at where we might do it, and we have heard from a number of teams and cities desirous to do it. One of the things we're considering is Yankee Stadium, because if we were to do the Winter Classic next January 1st at Yankee Stadium, it would be the last event in Yankee Stadium, and we think that's an intriguing and compelling story. But it's not a done deal. We don't have a deal with the Yankees. We don't have a deal with New York City. We don't have a deal with the Rangers. We don't have a deal with anybody necessary to pull this off. You know, but this got a lot of attention. Last Wednesday, I was in Chicago, as we discussed last week for the day, and John McDonough, the new president, formerly the president of the Cubs, who's now the president of the Blackhawks, is adamant, would be an understatement, about wanting us to do the Winter Classic at Wrigley Field. And so it got a lot of attention when I was there, and I couldn't talk to anybody without having the media ask me a question about whether or not we were coming to Wrigley. So we're going to explore all the options, making sure, you know, our desires may be one thing. The logistics of any particular stadium in the winter may be entirely something else. So we're still in the exploration stage, and to the extent anybody suggests we have a done deal with anyone anywhere, they're not accurate.
You're controlling the board up there in Toronto, and I've been told that callers are waiting.
Well, why don't we do it? Steve,
go for
New
it.
York City, you're with Bill and Gary on XM 204. What can we do for you? How are you?
Mr. Batman. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good.
We're great, thanks.
A week ago, a fellow Ranger season ticket subscriber called the show and mentioned to you that MSG raised playoff prices to an exorbitant level this year, to the tune of an 80% increase for the first round, 150% for the second round, 233rd for the third round, and 400% for the finals. That is nearly double the increase per round than last season. And as he mentioned a week ago, the caller, the 16-game strip to the playoffs costs more than what we pay for the 44-game season. I was sort of disappointed in your reply to him, to the caller. You know, I understand that market and demand set ticket prices, but to me, that price is set during the regular season. I don't see why your office cannot establish set percentage increases per round league-wide. You know, I know you report to the owners, but the fans, you know, which we were sort of used by your camp during the lockout, for course certainty, you know, we can use your help, too, with some of these interests.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry if my answer disappointed you. I try to be as accurate and candid in responding to all these questions as I can be. The simple fact of the matter is the league does not and cannot establish ticket prices for clubs. Clubs are free to do what they want, market themselves. My guess is there would be some legal issues if we tried to establish across-the-board ticket pricing for our teams. And the only way that you can react to ticket prices, and by the way, I'm not doubting these percentages. I'm not aware of them specifically. I'd be surprised if those were the percentages for every category of ticket. But if you're telling me that's what it is, then that's what it is. You need to make your voice heard to whatever club you may be a season ticket holder of, if you're uncomfortable with some of their practices. But there are certain things that, as a practical matter, as a logistical matter, as a legal matter, as among the league and the teams, and, you know, as against the governments that regulate business in two countries, it's not for the league office or me to be setting playoff ticket prices for any team. Anthony in Toronto, you're on with Bill and Gary.
Hello.
XM204, how are you?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Good. You didn't have to make a long-distance call. I must be just down the road from you.
Well, it's a 1-877 number anyway, eh?
Ah, okay. No extra charge.
You got it. Is Mr. Penny on?
Not yet. He will be.
Oh, okay. Well, I had a question for each of you. Perhaps you could take Richard's question and ask him later.
I will
the
do that.
The question for him was... there were rumblings around Toronto less than a year ago about an outdoor game to be played at BMO Field, and the story was that things between the ice-making company and MLSE had, quote-unquote, fizzled. You know, Toronto fans are very interested in being, up next in the series of teams to have outdoor games, if not the next, and we want to know, you know, what MLSE has in store there.
Actually, I can answer that question for you if you'd like.
Please.
Richard had spoken to us over the last year about the possibility of an outdoor game. I think we all concluded that BMO Field was probably too small because the logistics and expenses of doing an outdoor game are astronomical, and the seating capacity at BMO isn't great enough to accommodate it. And I know there was some exploration or some discussion, at least, about doing it at the Rogers Dome. I forget the name that it's actually being called these days. I just remember
Rogers
it as the Sky
Center.
Dome. Yeah, the Rogers Center. And the problem with that is they can't open the roof in the winter because if there's a storm or something, it will risk damaging the roof in terms of the tracks that guide the roof down. So that game, that building wouldn't be available other than as a big indoor game. And frankly, for those of us who get to go to the Air Canada Centre on a regular basis, there's no finer place to watch hockey and feel the excitement and passion of the crowd close into the ice. Second question, the one for me.
Yes. I had no idea about the Sky, though. Well, that's obviously going to be the next venue one would think of in Toronto, that's for sure.
No, Richard has been very thorough about exploring the options, and at least for the time being, I suppose at some point if they get an NFL team up here and build an NFL stadium, that might change the options that would be available to us.
Right. Okay, and the question for you is, what email address can I send you a proposal that I am preparing, outlining the technological advancement of off-ice officiating to replace on-ice officiating.
Wow. That would be a document I would be interested and fascinated to read. gbettman@nhl.com. What a shock. I'll look forward to getting it.
G Bettman,
like Gary Bettman, NHL.com.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it'll get to me. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks a lot.
John in Wichita, Kansas. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM204.
Hi. I was, in light of the recent incident last night in which Ryan Kesler claims that he was stomped on by Chris Pronger, what is the league, if anything, going to do in order to curb future events?
Well, obviously, Coley Campbell and his staff review every game as it's being played. To the extent that there are incidents that require supplemental discipline, he holds a hearing and makes the appropriate determination. Since I've been floating around on airplanes and haven't had a chance to sit with Coley, I don't know what hearings he may have had today or what's under review, but certainly if he thought that Chris Pronger or any player deserved a hearing and possibly a suspension, he would do it, and he does it as a general rule the day after the incident takes place. So unless there's an announcement forthcoming, there was probably no discipline warranted. Having said that, I'm going to probably see him in about an hour and a half, and I will ask him the question myself, and we'll see if an announcement's forthcoming. Although, again,
Gary, I had to see today that there was nothing that was going to happen to Chris Pronger.
Then I get,
I believe.
You know, by the way, I accept that, and then Coley, it's not because it wasn't brought to our attention, because, as I said, he watches or has somebody watching every game. Whatever happened probably didn't warrant discipline. Jim, near Pittsburgh, I'm told. You're on with Bill and Gary. Where's near Pittsburgh?
Mr. Bettman, Mr. Clement, it's a pleasure to talk to both of you. Mr. Bettman, I think we've known the Hockey League is fantastic, and I'm an unabashed George Laroc fan. That said, I'm just going to put it right to you. Under your watch, will fighting be allowed to stay in the NHL while the NHL continues to evolve and market itself to a younger and more family-friendly audience? I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you. I have always maintained the position that fighting has been a part of our game. It's not the most important part. It's not the dominant part. It's not a significant part, but it's always had a place in the game, and it has evolved. 3 years ago, three seasons ago, fighting was at its lowest point in 35 years. And this year, it's up a bit compared to last year, probably in reaction to the physical style of play that the Ducks used to win the Cup. It will continue to float, to evolve, to reach whatever level is appropriate based on the style of play. The more wide open the game, the more speed, the less clutching, grabbing, hooking, and holding, I think you generally tend to see less frustration and less fighting. But it does act as a bit of a thermostat on the game, And we have not taken any steps to reduce fighting. The league has plenty of rules to deal with brawls, to deal with the instigator. But the fact of the matter is nobody has been advocating abolishing fighting from the game, not our players. And most importantly, most of our fans tend to like the game the way it is. We're on our third year coming back from the work stoppage with record attendance and record revenues. I'm not sure the game requires that kind of fundamental change. I think it would disappoint a lot of fans. Maurice in Ocean City, Maryland, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
Hi, guys. Gary, you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you.
I have a two-part question. The first one involves some Capitals history. I've written letters. I've done everything. I've called Phil about trying to have Mike Gardner's uniform number retired. He's in the Hall of Fame, one of the greatest scorers in Caps history. And the second part is in the Bruins game last Saturday, there was a triple minor to Brashear and a coincidental penalty to Erskine. And they would not let Erskine out first. They made Brashear serve 2 minutes of his 6 minutes, Bill, and I thought maybe you could clarify that for some of the listeners.
Actually, Bill can do that. I will relay the sentiment that you've conveyed to Ted Leonsis, the owner of the Capitals. I don't know if it's something they're thinking about or there's a reason they haven't done it. Bill, you can respond, but my understanding is the way they assessed the triple minor was exactly right in that game, and the first penalty is the last penalty, you know, in term the last penalty assessed is the last penalty to expire, and my understanding is the officials handled it exactly right in that game.
Yeah, it's we would have heard had they not.
No, I know they did because Cully Campbell and I had the conversation while it was going
on.
The
double minor. Then there was a separate the separate incident was the roughing penalty that Brashear took on Shane Knighty. Just one of those unfortunate things that cost the Capitals dearly at that time of the season. It's almost, and we'll get into this another time. It's about the Caps and their trek to make the playoffs.
Well, actually, there was another penalty assessed, so the Caps actually went up 5-3, and then a goal was scored, and they were still down on the longest penalties yet to run, and the oldest penalty is what went out first. But the officials did it absolutely right.
You're all over it. You don't need me.
Oh, I always need you.
You.
Chris in Baltimore, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
Good afternoon, Mr. Clement and Mr. Bateman. I want to thank you for making yourself so accessible to all the XM studio and XM audience. Mainly, my beef is the same thing Maurice in Ocean City had, because we're both Caps fans. And it's this, you know, state of officiating in the NHL that is so inconsistent from game to game that you can't, as a player, as a fan, as a coach, as an owner, count on the officials making the same call each and every incident. The three consecutive penalties, on the first one, the high sticking penalty that Brashear incurred was legit. He should have had 4 minutes for that because it drew blood. And then the subsequent penalty for roughing on Shane Knighty, those should have been coincidental. And then the penalties afterwards, Erskine and Pody was being hooked and held behind the net as the Bruin player, I think it was Chara's, trying to gain an advantage. And Erskine had his stick held, and he was responding to his stick being held. And that's why he drew a penalty. And if the referees are watching the net, you know, the back official, which was the one who made the call, he should have seen the whole picture. The front official, the closest official, was watching the puck carrier. The back official was watching the play around the net. So I'm just curious as to why Chris Rooney made the calls that he did and didn't make the calls that he didn't make. Because that unfairly created a competitive edge advantage for the Bruins in the last 3 minutes of a game, whereas Bill McCrary last night in the Caps game where Ole Kolev got his 300th win, Bill McCrary did not call. I believe it was Pody who's whacking and hacking at a guy. who should have drawn a penalty, and it would have evened out the power play to 4-4. But Bill McCrae was looking right at the play. I saw him on TV, but he didn't call. He didn't make the call. So let me try
and respond. And this call is one of the things that I absolutely love about our game and our fans, because there is incredible passion. There's incredible knowledge about the game. You know, this is why NHL fans are the best, and why our game is as strong as it is. But I must tell you, our officials are held to the highest standards. Their work is constantly reviewed, constantly critiqued. It's constantly being watched. And I know there was a lot of frustration in a couple of recent Cap games, but sometimes when teams are a little less disciplined than they should be, penalties get called. The issue is when you suggest that you should make the same call at each and every incident, that's what the problem is, because no two incidents are exactly alike. The officials are trained to be on the ice and react exactly to what they see. The triple minors to Brashear were absolutely warranted. The subsequent penalties were absolutely warranted. Our hockey operations people were completely comfortable with the calls that were made in that game. And as a fan, it was disappointing, because it's a game you think the Capitals should have won. But while our officials, you know, are pretty good, probably better than the officials in any other sport, because they have an incredibly difficult job to do based on the speed of what's going on and the number of calls and non-calls, the fact of the matter is they're generally in position. They overwhelmingly get it right. But there's no lack of passion. And when your team doesn't perform the way you want, you get disappointed at the result. I understand that, but I tell you, we take nothing more seriously than the performance of our officials. And by the way, this is a human game. Players make mistakes, coaches make mistakes, and occasionally the officials make mistakes. And the best I can say about it is we hold them accountable. You're not allowed too many mistakes. We hold them to a very high standard.
The other thing, Gary, is take it from a player standpoint on the ice. I mean, it's easy for fans when you're looking down at a game to see just about everything. When you're on that plane on the ice, there are a number of people out there that can get in your way, not only for players and fans that say, why didn't he pass? Why didn't he see that? Well, there might have been a 235, 6 foot, 7 inch guy in between the person and the intended receiver of the pass. Same thing for the refs. And it's easy on one night to say, gosh, that should have been called. And the next night, well, that ref called it. Why didn't the first one? It's also a subjective game. And what might look identical to a fan looks completely different to a ref on a different night against a different team. We're going to step out and take a break. The phone number here, 877-645-6696. The email address, nhlhour@nhl.com. When we come back, we hope to have Richard Petty with us, the president and CEO of Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, right here on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM204 and NHL.com.
If you want an in-depth look at the NHL, you're in the right place. This is NHL Hour on the nation's hockey station, NHL Home Ice, XM204.
I'll keep your eyes on the road you held upon the wheel. Keep your eyes on the road you held upon.
And welcome back to the NHL Hour.
The doors
spread out today.
The doors. Did you do that for me again?
Actually, I requisitioned Bare Naked Ladies again.
No. Next week, I want the Allman Brothers. Okay, we've got to move this around. And then I want to move to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, who I understand are going on tour this summer again. You know, I can
tell
go to
the
that.
Truth.
I,
are they?
Yeah, and I can. It's playing in some small, eclectic places. Listening to them, I can feel 30 years younger. Actually, unfortunately, more than that, if the truth be
told. Let's all do that.
Okay, so that's
Bill Clement with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. I'm in New York at the NHL store powered by Reebok. Gary, you're in Toronto. And usually we have a guest by phone, but this is a special occasion because Richard Petty, I understand, is in studio with you.
That's the benefit of my going on location. Richard Petty, the CEO and president of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. Hello, Richard. Welcome.
Hi, Gary. Nice to be here with all of you.
So you're responsible for the Leafs, the Raptors, a soccer team, Air Canada Center. What am I leaving out?
Maple Leaf Square on stream in 2 years, Leafs and Raptors TV, BMO Field, Rico and the Marlies. So nice portfolio.
It is a nice portfolio. So tell our listeners exactly what your background is. I mean, people write about you in Toronto all the time, but this is an opportunity for people to learn more about you. So what's your background? How did you wind up in this job? And what do you do day to day?
Oh, boy. I think like you, Gary, they still sometimes say you're not a hockey guy. And how long have you been commissioner now? 15 years?
15 years.
Well, I've been in sports entertainment since 89 now. My first 19 years in consumer products, where I learned all about branding and marketing and sales. And that was with Colgate, General Foods, and Pillsbury. And then I joined Skydome before it was called Rogers Centre. And that was a great 4 years and learned a lot about the facility business, which is so key to be successful in professional sports today. Chased a basketball team with your friend David Stern, and he at the time gave it to someone else. So I moved on to broadcast and became president and COO of a company that had TSN, Rizzo de Sport, Discovery Channel. And then 11 years ago, I joined the sports business, first of all with the Raptors, and then when the Leafs bought us, I started being CEO for both, and we've grown exponentially almost since then.
So I get the rap, even though I've been at the NHL way longer than I was at the NBA. So you started on the basketball side and then switched over to hockey. So you were a hockey guy or a basketball guy?
Well, I like to say I don't have kids, but I do there, and I love all my kids equally.
On a day-to-day basis, what occupies your attention?
I'm really the business side. There's lots of chat about how much I get involved in the team side, but you know, I have a wonderful general manager in Brian Colangelo and the Raptors. Right now, I have a wonderful interim general manager with Cliff Fletcher. And, you know, I talk to them. I help them get what they need from the board of directors. And I know what's going on, but they make all the calls on the sports side. So I do what CEOs do, the financial side, the legal side, the PR side, marketing, sales. And because we're into the real estate side, that's of interest. And we're doing so much on the broadcast side, especially in new media. So there's lots to focus on every day. Every day is different.
So what can you tell people in terms of what they can expect from the process of finding a new general manager for the Leafs?
Well, you know, we're keeping it very tight because you open the door a bit and there's speculation without us even talking. Right now, we're really just doing our homework. We've mentally have between Cliff Fletcher and Gordon Kirk and myself notionally developed a wish list. We're doing our homework on who's out there, talking to everything from league officials to other general managers to scouts to agents, even to media, and kind of what I call doing a kind of a 360 on them. And then at some point at the end of the season, we'll go to our board and say, this is how we rank them, and we'll go after them. If someone is under contract, we're sure aware of all the tampering rules, and we would ask in writing for permission to talk to that individual. If that owner did not wish to grant that, we move on to the next candidate. And that's where we'll get to. We know that this is a pretty good place to be general manager, and we sense that we'll attract the very best.
We're talking to Richard Petty, who is the president and CEO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. I know you've said to me that you're not in a rush, you want to do this right, but if you're a fan following this, how long do you think it's going to take?
Well, I've learned long ago not to put a timeline on it because you get the general manager countdown. We do have the luxury of Cliff, Cliff was with us until 97. You know, he's been with Tampa and Phoenix since. You know, he's even more current than I thought he was, and he's really stepped into it. He knew the media. He finds out that it has changed since 1997 with bloggers and websites and more radio stations, but he's stepped right in. He's behaving. I mean, you know, he's got all the exhibition season lined up. He's got training camp lined up. He's going through it like he's going to do the draft. So he's doing it like he's the general manager. So we have the luxury of bringing in the right person at the right time.
What do you think went wrong with John Ferguson's tenure?
Well, I really believe we did a lot of homework on John at the time, and I really think he was the best guy. You know, decisions are made, and, you know, one of it is this is a very tough market. This is a tough market for basketball or hockey, and it's a difficult situation to put a rookie into. And, you know, I have an expression that mistakes give you experience. Experience gives you wisdom. All general managers make mistakes. The very best ones have made tons of mistakes. Obviously, you're going to make more as a rookie. And John learned a lot in his tenure. But in the end, we're all held accountable for the decisions you make. And we didn't make enough right decisions, whether it's trades or free agents. And ultimately, this is so much different than business sports. I mean, at the end of the year, there's only one parade. There's one trophy. In business, you know, the energy sector can have, you know, 10 companies that just had a great year. In sports, there's only one company, one team that had a great year. And, you know, we didn't realize our ambitions of moving towards a 14th Stanley Cup. And so we elected not to extend John's contract. His contract was up effective June 30th.
What do you think the biggest challenge, obviously, besides winning, is for the Leafs going forward and for hockey in Canada?
Well, I think the one thing is we can't be complacent. Things are changing. Things are changing across the world. But what we know, obviously, more specifically, is here in Toronto. The ethnic diversity of this city is really changing. About, you know, 50% of the people now are not from Toronto. When they're coming in, they're not coming from hockey-playing countries. They're coming from countries that, frankly, play more basketball and soccer. And so we can't take that the new immigrants having an affinity to hockey. The younger demographics, we do a lot of research. They have not seen a championship team in their lifetime. And so they haven't, they're not as almost indoctrinated. So we have to do the right things for them. So we've got to be mindful of that, doing the right things off the ice with, you know, new digital platforms and different types of marketing and more work in the community. And importantly, we've got to do the work on the ice to develop a winner and hopefully move towards the Stanley Cup.
We're talking to Richard Petty. When you sit in the Air Canada Center on a Saturday night, and this is me doing this a little firsthand, and Hockey Night in Canada is televising, you feel like you're in the center of the universe.
We are the center of the hockey universe.
There you go. And there are many who would not argue with that. But by being in the center of the hockey universe, the media scrutiny is intense. How do you deal with it? And how do you sleep at night after a particularly critical day in the media?
Well, we are in the toughest media market, and all due respect to the Bostons and New Yorks out there. We believe on a daily basis we've got over 30 media people following our team. I've been, you know, up in the press box when sometimes visiting teams have one person traveling with them. Things have changed a lot, and so it does put a lot of pressure on it. You know, when we sit there, and I'm speaking for myself or our owners like Larry Tannenbaum, you know, we're business people in the daytime. You know, our owners run, you know, billions of dollars of assets, and they're very sophisticated. But they come to the games a lot. I mean, I've been on the board of numerous companies, and if you get into the plant of that company, once a year you're doing something. I have people in my plant, which is Air Canada Center. I have my board members, I think last week, five different games between basketball and hockey. So they're there all the time. So we feel it as business people, and we feel it as fans, and that just doubles the pressure on you.
Describe casually, not technically or legally, your ownership structure and how it all works, because a lot gets written about that.
Well, we have four owners. The majority shareholder is Teachers at 58%, and then it's CTV, I think, around 15%. I'll get my percentages a little wrong. TD, the bank, the investment side of the bank, at about 14%, and Larry Tannenbaum at 13%. We meet on a regular basis, not as frequently as we used to when we first merged, when Mr. Stavro was still alive. But we meet on a regular basis, and, you know, we present to them on the business. The general managers come in and give them updates on the teams. And, you know, they make the decisions. Hopefully they approve the things I recommend, and we have a pretty good batting average of getting them approved and then executing them well. And then they let us go run the business. But they really hold us accountable for achieving success.
I had been asked a question earlier in the show about an outdoor game in Toronto. Any thoughts on it?
Well, your answer was perfect. As you know, we really tried to do BMO Field, and not only was it expensive, but it just wasn't significant enough. I mean, I saw the 71,000, as you know, because I emailed you during the game, 71,000 in Buffalo was special, and we could get maybe 22,000 in BMO Field, just not big enough. And then we kind of put it on hold, as you know, about a year ago, and I really wasn't thinking of Rogers Center. But after watching Buffalo, we put our hand up, as you know, to Bill Daly, and said we would explore it. We talked to Paul Godfrey, but you know, we just can't move the roof. They can't move the roof. It could suffer a lot of damage. And frankly, with the roof closed, it's a dome stadium. It's not special. The one advice I would give you, if you do Chicago or New York, have snow machines. Really, I mean this.
I've actually told that to the staff.
You know, because you want all around the kind of the layup area to the ice, you want it all covered in snow. And you know, have snow machines kicking snow in the air too, frankly.
except if it's 40 degrees, in which case we'd just be creating rain.
That's right.
You know, last summer and even recently, a lot has been said and written about both my position and your position on another hockey team in Southern Ontario. Would you like to weigh in on the subject? Because I've had an opportunity to do it a number of times.
Okay, I can imagine you being asked. I know a lot has been speculated on what our position was, And so let me make it clear. When this was going on, we did not talk to anyone. You know that I never brought it up with you. I never talked to any other clubs. We did no lobbying. We sat back and waited to see where it came forward. I mean, every ownership change or move, I know from being in leagues for 11 years, the league people, the commissioner, does a thorough due diligence and brings forward a proposition, a recommendation, with lots of background and due diligence. Obviously, it never got to that point. And if and when it ever does, we will view it like the other 29 clubs and make a decision that we think is right for the NHL and if possible, the Maple Leafs.
So you have no preconceived notion as we sit here today?
No, I'm not going to speculate it because I haven't seen a thing.
Well, makes sense. Matt Sundin was criticized in some quarters for not waiving his no-trade clause. So what's your view of that?
Well, I wrote Matt a note. You know, he's been there. He was there before I joined the Leafs. He's an outstanding captain. And, you know, in captains in soccer and at least in Major League Soccer and in basketball, they don't wear that C. It's not special. In hockey, especially in Toronto, it's very special. Everyone can tell you who the captains were. And Matt has been one of those very, very special captains. He decided to come back for a year. He negotiated with us. We agreed. It's, you know, both parties got what they wanted. He negotiated a no trade. Cliff talked to him about it. They had a really good discussion with him and his agent, and in the end, he decided not to do it. We respect that. You've seen how he's played leading up to the trade deadline, how he's played since. He's almost put the team on his back. He's given everything this year and every year that he's played for us. I respect that a great deal.
Actually, and I've been asked that question a number of times, too, and my view is that's something that he and the club agreed to as part of their negotiations, and there's no reason that a player who doesn't want to waive it should be forced to, because this is something that he got as part of the negotiation.
Well, also, you know, a lot of people say that, well, why can't you trade him? And, you know, all the people phoning in, including myself, Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment can fire me, but they can't trade me. And all the listeners out there, I suspect there's not a listener on the network right now that can be traded unless they're a professional athlete. It's quite unique. And he, as you said, he negotiated fair and square.
Bill, anything you'd like to ask Richard before we let him go?
Yeah, Richard, what kind of job do you think Paul Maurice has done with this team this year?
I have a lot of time for Paul. You know, it's a very tough job. He's got a wicked sense of humor. I told him halfway through the year, don't lose it. But I'll tell you, getting beaten upon by the 30 media types all day, the bags under his eyes get greater, and his sense of humor, you don't see it as often. You know, he's done a solid job. It's really not, I mean, ultimately he'll be judged on his performance and be judged by the incoming president and general manager of the Leafs. It's, you know, that's a decision for that individual. Personally, I have a lot of time for Paul. He's been great in the community, great with the fans. And, you know, I think he's done a pretty decent job, but ultimately it'll be the next president and general manager who will make the important decision.
Mr. Clement, what do we do next?
I guess we say goodbye to Richard and thank Richard for being a part of our show and such an interesting part of the show. Richard, thanks for letting us take a peek at behind the scenes of what your life is like as the president and CEO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, Richard. See you soon.
Gary, we'll step out, I guess, and come back and take some calls. Does that sound like a plan?
Sounds like a good plan to me.
All right. The NHL Hour will continue when we come back on NHL Home Ice XM 204 and NHL.com.
trucking. Got my chips cashed in. Keep trucking like the doodah man. Together, more or less in line. Just keep trucking on.
The Grateful
I don't
Dead?
Remember that on your list, Gary.
No, Grateful Dead's on my list, too. That'll get it done.
Okay.
It's good. You know, the good news is, since I don't have aspirations to be a radio personality, while being a disc jockey sounds like fun, I think I'll pass. How are you
doing? Great library that XM. Everything's fantastic. Hey, listen, we got to remind everybody to tune in Sunday at noon. The NHL is back on NBC. The games just keep getting better. This is the Flyers. They're fighting for their playoff lives, traveling west but within state to take on the Penguins, the Battle of Pennsylvania, and noon Eastern, NHL on NBC this Sunday.
Actually, somebody suggested to me while we were talking about outdoor games that we have the Flyers play the Penguins at Penn State in front of, what, 100,000 people? Be an interesting idea at some point, don't you think?
Great, great plan. Right now, the plan is, I think, to get to call. How many? You've got the board up there.
I have the
people
board.
People have been patient, as usual.
And they've been great holding on. So, Gary in Calgary, you're on with Bill and Gary. XM204, how are you?
Not bad. Gary Clegg here. And I want to work for the NHL, and here's my billion-dollar idea on how to grow the NHL in the States.
Okay.
Contact the NFL and see if they would invite you to have your All-Star festivities on the same weekend and in the same city as the Super Bowl. You could have NFL players involved in the skills competition. You could have Terry Bradshaw and Howie Long dressed in hockey gear teaching American people about the rules.
That's a cute, funny idea, although I think for the most part they play the Super Bowl in outdoor venues where the climate is warm enough to certainly melt the ice. We're pleased with how we did with the outdoor game, and the All-Star game is a fun event for us as well, but I think we need to keep the focus on our fans and our events, because that makes them special for us.
Billion-dollar ideas coming, right?
Exactly. I love it. Thank you. Patrick in Raleigh, you're on with Bill and Gary, XM204.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I love this show. It's a great idea.
Thank you.
My question revolves around why it takes so long for replay officials to make a decision. Now, I know it sounds petty, but when you're a fan and you're sitting in the RBC Center and you don't have the replays and you don't know what's going on, and it's just not right. It's like Buffalo fans.
Let me answer the question. And the reason it sometimes takes longer than it should is because the guys in the Situation Room want to get it right.
And when you hire me, I will make sure it's right. And I can do it in half the time, even better. It's really frustrating, especially I watch a lot of center ice, and it's really frustrating when you know what the call is, you see it, even the announcers know what the call is, and it still takes them forever.
Well,
they
think they know what the call is, and the reason the replays take so long sometimes is they're tough calls. They may be looking for something that you might not be aware of. Was it kicked? Did it deflect off of a high stick? And part of the reason it sometimes takes a long time is they're dependent on the replays, as is the NFL when they do replay, that the local or national broadcasters put up on the air so that they can see the replay and slow it down and make a determination. The only time it takes a long time is when it's a tough call and they're trying to get it right. I assure you they take no longer than they have to, and our guys are doing this for every goal. They're experts in it. They probably review 9,000 or 10,000 situations a season. They know that certain angled cameras give you an optical illusion or a distorted view. They know exactly what they're looking for, and some of these calls are just tough to make, and their instructions from me are, let's get it right. If it takes a little bit longer, we don't want a goal allowed or disallowed by mistake. We want to try and get it right. And I believe in the course of an entire season, if we get a handful of these wrong, it's a lot. Our replay system is one that's been studied by the other leagues and generally perceived to be the best. To the extent it seems like it's taking too long, I apologize, but it's in an attempt to get it right. Dan in Chicago. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Anybody that has gets frustrated with the replays, they just have to remember back to before the skate in the crease rule was changed. and then they'll smile.
Well, and also,
because virtually every goal was reviewed then.
And also, one of the things that will be in place in all buildings for next year is that the Situation Room in Toronto, that's reviewing all the games as they're being played, they will be able to talk to the officials on the ice, so that in the arena we'll be able to have an announcement made explaining exactly why a particular call was made. And we think that will enhance the in-arena experience. Who's on is Dan in Chicago. I'm sorry. How are you?
Good morning, Commissioner Bettman. It's a pleasure to have you take my call.
Thank you for calling.
Before I get to my question, I just want to make one statement. Your officials in the NHL do an amazing job. I was a linesman for a Pee Wee hockey game, and I was getting yelled at out of the stands for missing offsides calls for 8-year-olds playing hockey.
There's no shortage of critics, and there's no shortage of passion about this game, but you know how hard it is. And frankly, you know, we talked about this before. Sometimes you get a better view on the ice than somebody or even a camera in the stands gets.
Exactly. Now, my question actually isn't mine. I'm stealing it from someone who called into Esposito's show, but he told him to call the commissioner's show, but I haven't heard him call in yet, so I just wanted to ask if we could, to open up the game and have more scoring, if we could have 5-minute major penalties for fighting, switch to team penalties, because I was, and do 4-on-4. I was under the impression that before they were team penalties, and I don't know when they got changed to being personal penalties, but I don't know. I just want to know why we changed it, if we did, and if there's any hope to change it back to 4-on-4.
Well, actually, I think it predates me. It goes back, Bill. I have no recollection as to when and if that change was made. I just know what it is.
I'm a little cloudy. You're talking about I'm lost here. Explain what the question is.
Well, see, when you get a fighting penalty, you know, the people that are fighting just go on the penalty box and you still play five on five.
I got you. So you want to play 4-on-4 if there are two guys that end up with fighting majors?
Absolutely.
I don't have a problem with that.
You know what? It's something we'll raise with the general managers and the competition committee at the next meetings. You know what? Jimmy Gregory, our senior vice president, who was recently inducted in the Hockey Hall of Fame, knows the history of every single rule. I'm going to have to consult with him on this, and he's probably got the answer on the tip of his tongue because he knows it all. He's been with the league, I don't know, 25, 30 years. He was with the Leafs as their general manager. He's seen it all and he's done it all, and I know he will have an answer for that question, and I'll try and get it from him. Kevin in Ottawa, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM204.
Well, hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'll be brief, thinking out of the box here. How about Ottawa, nation's capital? Gary, you're familiar with the Rideau Canal, I think.
I've had the, let me cut you off for a second. We'll keep you on the line, though. I said a few years ago, how about if we erected stands on the canal? Global warming and the strength of the ice might prohibit it. Is that your question?
Well, the Rideau Canal, Dalles Lake, I went to university there. You think of the thousands of people get on that canal. You'd probably do it during winter loot. It's a world-renowned international tourist spot. And while I was on hold, I thought of something very quick. Parliament Hill, they get over 100,000 people sometimes in Canada Day with rock bands and whatnot, and with big jumbo monitors. Obviously, the advantage of the ice, they can build bleachers in a spot that doesn't have an existing arena, but you put it up there, you got the Parliament building in the background, perhaps you play Washington back-to-back, and who knows, maybe do one on the White House. I'll take your comments off the air. Thanks.
It is an intriguing idea. There are probably a series of logistical issues, building the stands, making sure that we have the amenities, both for the 100,000 people that would show up, and perhaps as important, making sure the conditions are ideal for the players, because these games count in the standings, and you wouldn't want a team to miss the playoffs by a point or two as the result of a game that wasn't played under optimum competitive conditions. There are no shortage of intriguing, exciting ideas for outdoor games. And that's why all of the speculation that we've made a particular decision for next year just isn't correct. We're thinking about, we're talking about, we're exploring a myriad of options, and there are no shortage of them. But certainly what's great about these conversations and the last caller's suggestion is people are thinking about this, and they're thinking about it in emotional, passionate terms and about how to embrace our game in this very special way. And I think that's one of the great legacies of what we did on January 1st.
On a warm day, tough to make artificial ice on the Rideau Canal, but it would be the longest breakaway in the history of the NHL.
Dan Craig tells me, in terms of making ice, we're good to 55 degrees, but not for building stands. And also, my understanding from somebody I spoke to last night was that the skating season on the canal has actually been shortened over the last 2 years because it hasn't been cold enough to keep the canal as frozen as they'd like for as long as they'd like. John in Nova Scotia, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
Thank you very much for taking my call. First, I want to make a comment. Mr. Commissioner, my opinion has changed of you greatly since I've begun listening to this program.
Did it get better or worse?
Oh, it's much better.
Thank you.
I enjoyed your interview with Ron McLean immensely. I thought it was nice to see the shoe on the other foot.
me too.
Your love of classic rock and roll warms my heart, I must say. So that's my statement.
Thank you.
My comment or my question is, I live in Nova Scotia, and I'm a Bell Express View subscriber. And this year, for the first time, I became a Center Ice subscriber because I'm a Toronto Maple Leaf fan. And they black out games out here. And we are, because of geographic restrictions, I suppose, forced to become, and you can understand my problem with this, either a Senator or a Hab watcher. And being a Leaf fan, that's almost like I'd rather stick hot pokers in my eyes. Is there any way other than purchasing the Center Ice package to be able to get around the blackout? I'm going to hang up and listen to your answer. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, you should be able to get Leaf games if you're a Center Ice subscriber and you live in Nova Scotia. The way our television policy works is there are certain teams that service certain areas, and then if you want to get the other games, either from the other Canadian teams or from the games in the United States, then you need to subscribe to Center Ice. I don't think that's a bad thing because there are like 900 games available, and for what we charge relative to the other sports leagues, what we charge for the number of hockey games you get, we happen to think that this is a pretty good bargain to get your fill of virtually every game you could possibly want to see. Chad in Edmonton, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. Just a couple quick comments and a question, then I'll hang up and let you answer. I'd have to agree with the last caller as well. My opinion of the job you're doing, Mr. Bettman, has certainly been heightened. I had a chance to hear you talk to the season ticket holders in Calgary during the lockout, and I was definitely impressed with your enthusiasm and passion for the game. I thought it was great to see.
Thank you.
My comment is I can't stand the away uniforms at home, wearing the darks at home. And I'd like to see the home teams go back to the whites. I was just wondering if the NHL has had any plans or any discussions to go back to the old format.
We've had a lot of discussions, and on balance, the clubs decided they wanted to leave it the way it is. Thank you for calling.
Gary, safe travels. That's it for the show. Thanks to Dan Cronin here in New York, Mike Trigiani in Toronto for handling the boards. Coming up next, in the slot, Phil Esposito and Jim Taddy. We'll see you next Thursday at 4 Eastern.